Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Happy Sunday. Welcome to The Main Course without Patrick Martins. I am your host, Alexis McLaughlin, here with the man, the myth, the legend, the future mayor of Bushwick, Philip Gilmore.
That is true.
We have Lex Taylor in studio today. Lex has recently won, I guess his burger was dubbed the greatest in America by Esquire magazine and the network. So that's
thank you.
Pretty high
accolades.
Great
burger, the next great burger, not the old.
Yeah.
The old burger.
Are you guys going to be running mates? Because that's a good platform.
Absolutely. Yeah. That would be.
And it's actually not it's not mayor. It's actually borough president.
Okay. Oh, borough president.
Yeah. Cool. Baby steps.
Yeah.
Wait, is president not above mayor?
No.
I need to go back to municipal government.
And with an epic burger in your corner, I mean, there's no saying where you can't go, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
So I guess, you know, welcome back. We just were on a hiatus for summer,
Sun
break
and
in
fun.
The season.
Sun and fun we had.
Oh, yeah. Did you have any? I worked. I haven't seen you.
I went to Brighton Beach one time, and then I was in Miami. That's about the only time I left this neighborhood.
Yeah. Oh yeah, back in Miami. What's going on with the pop up?
Some of you may or may not know, the Mondrian Hotel in South Beach asked us down for 3 months, and it was going to end October 23rd, but now we're talking maybe semi permanent, which is good because, you know, I really want to be there for Art Basel and during the season because that's, you know, where the fun and the money is.
So. Yeah, excuse to go to Miami too,
exactly.
Especially now that winter is upon us.
Yeah, I definitely am going to be down there. At least twice in the next 6 months, hopefully. So
that's awesome.
Fun, yeah.
Yeah, good for Momo Sushi Shack.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What else is going on? You know.
That's about it. We're gonna Moku Moku opened, and we're actually gonna be doing some Burger Mondays at Moku Moku. Lex is gonna come in and feature his burger that he won with, and then also a couple new burgers like a lobster mushroom and
We got a shrimp burger.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
it actually outsold the Wagyu burger.
Well,
people ordered two of them.
After the show ended, and I was like, all right, I got to do a pop up. I got to get this thing out there. But I'm like, of course, I need some sort of other non meat option. So I started messing around, like literally just like one time I sat down and made this like shrimp burger from some sort of old ideas I had had. And it was just like the greatest thing I'd ever made. So all the time I'd spent making this like meat burger, it was actually, wow, like the shrimp burger, I thought it up in like 2 minutes, was like way better. So got that and the lobster mushrooms.
How did you get into all this? Because you're not a chef in your day to day.
Right.
This is a hobby. So how did you get connected into this kind of... Or tell us a little bit about the contest, too.
Right. Well, you know, I'm an artist, and I dabble in, like, everything. Like, printmaking, and bag making, and illustration, and painting, and sculpture, and woodworking, and, like, just everything. And food has obviously always been, like, you know, something you do every day. And so I've always applied that same creativity to food. And, you know, Phil and I have known each other 15 years. We were, roommates at some point. We had this great house. We were always sort of like in the social, you know, scene out here. And so we always had these big barbecues. And so I was like, well, it's not my house and I'll barbecue. And so I started basically like just reading the side of like the bag of the charcoal that was, make sure charcoal is in a pyramid. I'm like, all right, I got this. And it just kind of started with that. But it was like all the time. And it was always this like... how can I like really nerd out on this and just make it like crazy good? And so, you know, that's kind of been my secret weapon the whole time is I've never had to do it for a living. So I can always like really enjoy it and not care at all, like, you know, what the numbers are. And do we have a vegetarian option? I'm like, I have no vegetarian option. All I have is the most rad food ever. And, you know, and the cool thing is you can, you're free to like mess up and just screw around and make like horrible, horrible mistakes. And it's like, well, you know, nobody else has to suffer.
That's a lot of product development too. You got like, you know, 15 years and a lot of feedback.
Yeah.
Just cooking burgers for people.
Yeah, exactly.
For fun.
It's not just burgers. I mean, my real sort of background is in barbecue and smoking, and a lot of like Mexican food stuff too. I grew up in Mexico, or I spent a lot of time there, and got family there, so that's like, if I ever learned sort of like traditionally any real food, any cuisine, it would be Mexican. So, but I've always just applied that and, you know, just mixed everything up.
Yeah.
So, I think it helps.
How'd you get connected with Esquire for...
Right.
Because they do this every year. Phil was telling me that Esquire, you know, compiles these, you know, kind of like a list, or like, this is a well-respected thing, you know, the best burger in America. Like, they take it pretty seriously.
Yeah, well, I mean, Esquire's got some amazing shows. They're really, like, pumping it up right now. And they had Knife Fight, which I don't know if you ever saw Knife Fight, but
yeah,
Knife
I have
Fight
a few
was
that were
like
on that.
It was an incredible show, and like really like an underground basement battle scene, beautifully shot. So they're like really doing some cool stuff with that. But you know, I was trying this this like gourmet wilderness cooking thing called Dinner in the Woods, where we'd go out into the middle of the wilderness, like even in the wintertime with nothing but like a whole pig and like, you know, shallots and some nice olive oil and some rope, basically, and like make our own smoker, make our own fire pit, make our own fort, our own table. We'd take a chainsaw too, just. And so it was like this fun idea, right? I wanted to, yeah, I like to do that kind of stuff. And then one of my friends was like, you should be on TV. Like, you kind of like doing this stuff and you're pretty good. He's like, you should apply for The Taste. It's on right now. I was like, well, I'll do that. So I applied for The Taste and I made it like really far through that process. I didn't get it. But afterwards, people start calling me up. They're like, Lex, so we saw you on The Taste. We think you'd be a great host, or we think you'd be great for this. And so things just started blowing up like that. And I started getting phone calls. And then somebody was like, Lex, how about the next great burger? I was like, I'm there. I have to be on it. I'll do whatever it takes to be on that show. So it was just meant to be, I guess.
That makes sense. I want to know what's the burger you won with? So if you want to try it, it's going to be at Moku Moku
tomorrow night.
And you're listening to September 14th.
Yes.
And you know, and we've also dabbled, Phil, of continuing on, right? Mondays is sort of like a thing, right?
Yeah.
People can sort of plan for this.
I would say we are very prepared for tomorrow, but I would say last week when we did it, we ran out at 8:50.
Yeah.
We thought we had enough to last till midnight, and we ran out at 8:50 because literally everybody was ordering everything again.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
So, no, we're going to be really prepared tomorrow. The burger, what was the question?
I mean, what is it?
What's, yeah, you the know, burger that won.
The components.
Yeah, the
burger
components.
That won.
So, it's complicated, but the key thing you need to know is that the bun is a fried beignet. So that's kind of like the thing.
All right.
And it was the
to
know,
order though. They don't. It, we're,
yeah,
he's not making
right there.
He's not making like 100 at 4 o'clock, and then you're eating a 4-hour-old. Literally every beignet is made to order.
Yeah. And then so you know when I was trying all kinds. You know, with the next great burger, I'm like, I need to. I'm like a no name chef. I'm like, if I'm going to do this and come out there, I got to do something crazy. So I was thinking up all this wild stuff, and when I ended up with the fried beignet, I was like, all right, well, fried beignets are served with the powdered sugar, so there needs to be some sweet element to this. And so I started kind of dabbling with like some sort of compote jelly thing, and I came up with this pear jelly. So that's sort of the sweet element. And then the Wagyu beef, some sharp cheddar, and then heirloom tomato, an aioli. It's like a saffron aioli. Homemade pickles. I do my own pickles. And then my favorite part of the whole thing is this salt that I make. It's like a dry rub. I do it for like dry rubs, and there's all these different variants, but they're all kind of, they all come from these Mexican dried peppers like ancho and pasilla and guajillo. So I do that, and that really adds kind of a real nice like spice and sort of smoky component to the whole dish. So that's basically it.
Yeah. It's just a burger on a donut.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's not a sweet donut, right? That's the cool thing. It's like, it's not, some people, you know, do the whole donut thing and it's like, wow, like your teeth must just like be dying after eating that. But the beignet is perfect because it's really more about the texture, right? It's got that crunchy outside and then the inside is just sort of this dough, like you basically had a fresh piece of bread that came out of the oven.
Yeah.
Like that's what I was going for, not the sweetness, right?
But it's kind of like, I'm thinking it'd be that squishy dough texture that you would get in, like, you know, that fast food burger that you crave.
Yeah.
Of where the dough just has a
softness. What I really like about it, too, is, you know, medium rare burger is going to be not hot on the inside. But when you taste the burger temperature-wise, the hottest thing is the beignet.
Yeah.
Which, even if you grill a bun or you heat up a bun or however you do it, it's not hot on the inside. But because you're deep frying the dough, when you bite into it, temperature-wise, the hottest thing is pretty much the is the inside of the beignet, which I love.
Yeah. And that's why, like, it's got to have this, like, big... heirloom tomato, like thick cut, because it's so cool that really you're biting into this big hot doughy mess, right? You want to have those cool elements in there. So like, you know, oh, it's got an onion in there also, raw onion. So raw onion, the cold pickles, the heirloom tomato, right? All this cold stuff, arugula, maybe arugula in there. So yeah. Just to battle off all that heaviness. And it's got a good balance to it. So
sounds delicious. Yeah. I'll be by tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'll try one or two or three.
Yeah.
We'll see.
You gotta try the shrimp one too. That's got like a coconut curry sauce with pasilla dry rub shrimp that are like butterflied out, and then sliced mango. Dude, ooh. Sliced mango with a little cilantro inside the fried beignet. So, just saying, you know, saying that.
I mean,
that's also there.
I tried the burger a couple times and I was like, wow, that's a really perfect burger. No offense to your burger that you became internationally famous from, but the shrimp burger, when I tasted it first time, I was like, this is one of the best bites of food I've ever had. It's that good.
Yeah, Chance walked out, and he, like, his eyes were just, like, wide open. He was like, oh, my God, Lex, that was incredible. I was yes! All right, cool.
You were asking about Sweet Ups. What was that?
I want to hear. What is Sweet Ups? Because you guys were just talking about.
Whoa. We're going there.
Whoa.
It's so early.
Yeah, I know. Whoa. I don't even like to talk about it, you know?
It's
like,
kind of sacred.
Yeah, it's sacred and it's depressing because I'm just like, oh, man.
I'm an old man now.
Yeah. It was, you know, when I first moved out here in like 99 to Graham, there was nothing out there. And then a couple years later, this like bar, literally... I walked by like the day they opened and was like, oh, bar, walk in, met Benjamin, the owner, and it had this sort of new kind of design that you see now everywhere, but it was like the grandmother's living room, dive bar, but like grandmother's living room, really nicely laid out.
Leather banquettes and like the hand-flocked red Vertilise, you know,
wallpaper. Is this considered Bushwick then?
This is right at the corner of Graham and Grand.
Yeah, so I guess it's like if there is anything that is East Williamsburg, it would be that.
At that point, that was called East Williamsburg sort of, right? Yeah.
Well, technically, this is too, but everybody
I don't understand how people call this is East Williamsburg.
Well, it's East Williamsburg Industrial Complex, I guess.
But it's also whatever the cool neighborhood is. Like,
exactly.
I'm over here in Bushwick, but all of the buildings, or a lot of them, are called Ridgewood.
Yeah.
Because, you know, 25 years ago, like, you wouldn't want to ever be associated with Bushwick. And they just have these old signs that, like, now they would be like, oh, God, change that back to Bushwick.
I think that's the thing with East Williamsburg, too, is that people wanted to be like, you know, this isn't Bushwick.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, but anyways, the bar was, like, there was this group of people that ended up there that I think all of my friends in New York are all somehow related through that place.
Me too, pretty much.
Literally everybody. Yeah. And, yeah, and then everybody, you know, the
were
guys...
Were you working there?
I never... Well,
or just spending too much time there?
Yeah, I spent a lot
of
time...
You did barbecue there.
I did. So I did do barbecue. That is the tiny little back alley. And I'd set up my grill there, and we'd barbecue there. I would also smoke stuff at my house and then bring it over and just like... Just be like, listen, bartender, like, I just give me, like, some free booze, whatever you got, and, like, everybody can just enjoy these smoked ribs.
Yeah.
So we did that. And then, Ben went on to do the Royal Oak and some stuff. What's that? Hotel Chantel? What's the place on these?
Hotel Chantel.
Chantel, something like that, yeah.
If you look at the lineage or whatever, it's like Chris and Brandon from Roberta's, Montana, from Montana's, Anthony Falco, me, and then also the original bartenders were K-Rock and Wolfie, who K-Rock has probably the best screen printing studio in the world right now, does like bands and artists and all this stuff. It's just like everybody associated with like Sweet Ups went on to like greatness.
Yeah. And I'm thinking like, why did I ever get out of the food thing? I mean, I've never been out of it, but like you guys really went for it hard.
Yeah.
And I was like doing my digital stuff. Yeah. But, yeah. Well, when Chris told me, he's like, yeah, we're moving in, we're going to go open a pizza shop out in Bushwick. I was like, you know, like another Tony's or something. Like, yeah, it sounds good. Like, you know, and like it was years later where I was like, Roberta's is his. I was like, damn.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah.
When I think of Benjamin, because, you know, Benjamin in retrospect is this kind of like, I think for a while he was hated, but now I think in retrospect people, it's a weird thing because he was so ahead of his time, and, and but also I'm paraphrasing, but there's some Mark Twain quote that like it's something to the extent of sometimes recognizing talent is sometimes greater than the talent itself, and it's like if you want to talk about somebody that had an eye for picking the right people, he had an eye for picking just the right people, because think about like everybody that worked there went on to like, you know, well, do something cool.
I gotta say though, I think it's also a lot to do with luck, because in that he had the spot out there, and the only people out there at that corner, that corner was scary. Remember, like, that lady got her arm chopped off by, like, the butcher-wielding guy? Yeah. I mean, that was not the same Williamsburg as today.
Yeah.
And the people that were out there were, like, this sort of, like, renegade crew of people that had, like, left Manhattan.
Pirates.
And were, you know, Bedford was, like, a trickling stream of, like, hipsterdom. And getting out into, like, to the Graham stop was, like, you're in the Wild West out there.
Yeah.
And so the few people that were out there all kind of came together into this little bar.
Yeah.
And there was a like-minded group of people that I think had that kind of, you know, veracity to go off and do these kinds of things, like open a Roberta's or a Momo's and that kind of stuff. So that attitude was already a part of those people, I think.
And right now, everything is just kind of mishmashed. It's all like, you know, obviously, you know, there's probably billionaires now that live on the water in Williamsburg, and then you kind of, but it just kind of all kind of like, but I was going to say, if like the street we lived on was completely the safest block in the world, because it's like old school, you know, Italian. Pat, where's Pat?
Well, you had Patty Horsethroat.
Yeah,
he'd Patty like, Horsethroat.
Yeah, he's like, hey, yo. He's like, I sat out there with my shotgun, and I see these guys come through, and I see them just running, man. They just running when they see the shotgun.
Yeah. And I was like, that is why this is the safest block.
Yeah, but then you go two blocks over to like Grand, or like one block past like Mauser, and it's just straight up like, you know.
Yeah, Grand was the line right there.
Yeah,
it's like even literally one side of the sort of Williamsburg side of Grand was like, you know, passable.
Yeah.
And then, like, I remember when, what was it called? Bushwick Country Club opened on the other side of Grand.
Mauser, yeah.
Yeah. Man. And it was still on Grand, but it was on that side of Grand.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa, crazy. Somebody's crazy here. Yeah. They're going out there. Yeah.
That place is still around.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was that old. Well, when you go inside, it kind of looks that old.
What's that, Bushwick Country Club?
I think it looked that old the day it opened. if my memory serves
It's distressed.
That place is a hot mess, but I
think that was part of why you call it, it's like, this place looks like such a shithole, we're going to call it a country club.
Do you know there is no dispute about this, if you're in the know, that the pickleback was invented there?
Really?
Like 100%.
I did not know that.
Yeah, like even like the you know, Mr. Boston's cocktail grind, they even credit. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was,
I love a pickleback.
Yeah, there's a guy named Reggie who's a rapper named the Mr. Move, and some like, you know, Manhattan lady wanted like some like crazy, like, you know, stupid, you know, I don't know, cosmopolitan or some drink that he refused to make. He's like, if you do a shot of Old Crow and chase it with pickle juice with me, I'll it was kind of a thing that he would do, and she did it, and then it just kind of blew up from there. But it literally, the pickleback was, I mean, I'm sure somebody along the way did it, but in New York City,
it was coined.
Modern day, it's, you know, that's where it came from. Yeah, man.
I'm honored to be a part of that.
Yeah, man. Good times.
If we only had planned ahead, we should have had picklebacks in the studio. Exactly what I need on a Sunday, a shot of whiskey followed by a shot of pickle juice, which is my favorite part of it. Yeah. I just want to drink like all the pickle juice.
Well, you know what's so funny, too? This is kind of a fun fact, too, is that the original McClure's pickles were, I can say this. It's they were making the pickles in the basement. I guess John, the owner, knew the guys from McClure's, so the original pickleback was done with McClure's pickles. They were literally, it was not on shelves. It was a very small operation in the beginning.
I can't. When people try and do a pickleback with like fancy like homemade pickles and like that pickle, you know, juice that comes from that. Yeah. It's the worst. Like yeah. you can't.
I think the best is like, you know, Vlas or dill or, you know.
Patamta. Yeah. It's just got to be like regular pickle juice.
Yeah, exactly.
It's got to be the dill version.
Dill
right?
version.
Yeah. No sweetness. No.
Yeah.
You're in it for vinegar and salt.
The sting.
Yeah. I've been nerding out with some pickle making. Like everyone else around here. And I was like, I don't think I would ever drink that. Like, I don't think that'd be a fun pickle pack. That would be, I don't know.
Yeah, funny where the neighborhood went. Now you go on the other side of Grand Street and there's a gourmet artisanal pickle shop.
Everywhere. And next
to, yeah.
And the jerky.
Else. The jerky.
Did you guys see the SNL skit about Bushwick? It was, I think it was fun, it filmed on St. Nicholas, and they're like, Martha's like, you know, you're gangster guys, and he's like, you know, Martha's, he's like, oh, you're your baby's daddy or your baby's mama, and he's like, no, Martha's the artisanal mayonnaise shop. I kind of sucked because I was like, God, that's such a great idea, an artisanal mayonnaise shop. I think I want to open that, and I'm like, oh, bad man.
Do you ever go over to Lady J's and hang out with Sam? You know him? Sam Mason, he's got the Empire Mayo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know Sam, but I've never actually been to Lady J's. I know.
Yeah,
of
we
it.
Should go over there.
Yeah,
it's definitely cool. I was doing the Kings County cookout there for a long time with some friends. We're doing barbecue until they shut it down. You can't do that anymore.
Yeah,
the fire department will just shut you down. No barbecuing in the back of these places anymore. You got to have like a.
Yeah, the fire department, all that is, you know, it is tough to cook in any unconventional way, you know, be it you know, outdoors or...
You know, this is coming from somebody that has had to deal with so many, you know, just nightmarish, you know, like going through the motions to open a bar or a restaurant. You know, you have gas and you have all this stuff. You have to go through so many loops. But at the end of the day, man, and even the health department, at the end of the day... It's annoying that you have to do all these, you know, stipulations and, you know, you have to do all these things that cost a lot of money. But if these things weren't in place and it was so strenuous in some place like New York, if you just let people do whatever the fuck they want, there would just be people like just people dying all the time.
Yeah,
it would
yeah,
be
yeah.
just dangerous to walk down the street because there's going to be like, you know, I mean, even that it was the West Village, that fucking explosion.
Yeah. East Village.
Yeah.
East Village. It was right by Jimmy Carboni.
Exactly. Like, you
His
know,
restaurant.
I used to eat there. I had eaten there
place?
Like that week.
Was it sushi?
It was sushi. Yeah. It was sushi. Though there was other things on that block. There was like a noodle place, B&H, which I think is still there. Mm-hmm. The B&H, the vegetarian. I work right next door. It was like,
but
at the end of the day, that happened because some dude took a legal shortcut.
Yeah, the gas lines.
The gas lines and like so,
siphon gas out of yeah. No, I hear you though, Phil. That's true.
I mean,
you know, I was at this place around here a while back, and they had like all these motorcycles parked in there, and the fire department came in, and they're like. He's like, why are you busting her balls? And then, you know, you find out later, like, well, you know, there is actually, like, bikes full of, like, gasoline all sitting around. And, like, people are smoking a few feet away. And it's like, you know, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, right.
So every now and then it's like, yeah, I guess, you know, it's good to have some oversight.
Yeah.
To some extent.
Let's take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk more with Lex Taylor.
Woo! Yeah.
The following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Welcome back to The Main Course without Patrick Martins on heritageradionetwork.org. We are in studio with Lex Taylor, who is dubbed now the official greatest burger maker in America.
In all fairness, I have not battled every single burger maker in America.
Maybe that's what you dream at night.
I put the challenge out to you now. I challenge everyone.
Yeah.
No, but...
You know, I was going to say it was fun. Speaking of Patrick Martins, we brought you over to Heritage, and you, I think you got
the Berkshire pork chaps.
Yeah, how were those?
Those chaps were good.
What'd you do with them?
Good. All right, so what did I do? I did a pasilla dry rub. So check this out. I was just in Cameroon, West Africa, and I got this this white pepper that you get. It was like the Cameroonian contraband. I was like so nervous bringing it back, like bags like wrapped in duct tape of like
of white powder.
White powder.
Good job. Good thinking.
I swear to God, dude, this is pepper, okay? But anyways, so I had some of that. I mixed that with some pasilla, like ground up pasilla in a mortar pestle. So it was like big sort of flaky chunks.
For those that don't know, pasilla are the little crickets, right?
No, I'm just kidding. Yes, that too. I would have thrown them in too if I had them. The chapulines.
No, chapulines.
No, it's like, you know, smoky pepper, a little sweet. It's not that spicy.
It's so good.
So good. Just the flavor. Anyway, so mix that all up with a little, what else? Some salt. And then on the grill, man, I got some nice like red oak. You know, red oak is like the stuff you get for your fireplaces. It's like, that is called natural hardwood.
Yeah.
So I used some of that in my in the grill. That was it. I made a caramelized apple with like a little wambé. You know, I was just like poured some liquor in there. But it was like caramelized apples with like a little molasses and honey.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just sort of like a schmear, like a schmear kid, you know, I just schmear it on top of a day. Yeah. So I did the schmear. And then, you know what I did? I had some pickled gherkins with them, Mike. Ooh. Some pickled gherkins. Yeah. I don't know. I was like, I was over at the Meat Hook and I was like, what the hell is this? And you had to read the label. I was like, I have no idea what a gherkin is, but it
was a gherkin pickle.
Yeah,
like a little baby pickle.
Yeah, it's like a marble sized watermelon without anything inside of it. It's just like the rind of a watermelon. That was my
and that's what a gherkin. I thought.
A gherkin, Mike. Yeah, it's like a tiny little pickle, basically. So
yeah, gherkin. Who doesn't know what gherkins are?
You're right. No, I did know. No, I had no idea what a gherkin is. I guess that's part of the amateur chef is you're just like, I have never heard of that.
I grew up in Mexico. Leave me alone.
Yeah, we
leave
don't have
alone.
Gherkins in Mexico. Jeez.
You know what
I guess that's why you put an Australian accent on the gherkin.
Yeah. It just sounds
someone
right.
Someone doesn't understand the origin of
it. It sounds like it should be spoken in Australian accent.
You know what I was going to tell you? A couple of years ago, I was exploring doing a taco place. And so about 3 years ago. And I was really obsessed with maybe doing the best tacos in New York City, and I kind of came to this stalemate. And I hope you could chime in after I tell you what my stalemate was. Mm-hmm. Is I realized that everybody's trying to do what's the whole thing with Mexican food, and people's complaining, oh, it's not authentic. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking about the best, the most authentic taco in New York would probably fail. Like because you grew up in Mexico, so think about the taco stands, most authentic ones. And the couple times I've been in Mexico, the most authentic ones is they got dirty hands and they're slapping on the salsa with their hands. And I'm like, you know, and the quality of the meat, it's like, you know, there's a difference between the best, but then also if you did an authentic Mexican taco, have you had an authentic Mexican taco in New York City?
I have, actually. I mean, authentic. I mean, there's one that is actually fairly good. There's a couple guys that cook them.
Mm-hmm.
You want the guy with the one eye. He does the best one.
Of course.
This is at the corner of Irving and Stanhope. There's a Mexican restaurant there that's, like, empty and just has never worked. But they decided one day they're going to put a little taco al pastor guy out front.
Yeah.
And you know, within all the limitations of cooking in this city, they pull off a good one.
Really?
Yeah. It's, you know, the thing with the authentic, because I hear you, and you don't need... The problem here is like, okay, we're going to do this taco with a braised short rib, and it's going to be tender and delicious. But if you're in like the market in Mexico, it's not a, you're not getting the good flavors because the meat is shitty and because their hands are dirty. You're getting it because they've got they got the gristly burnt ends. They've got all these textures going through the meat. Yeah. You've got that balance. You've got the onion. You've also got these nice little tortillas that are like really the size of like. I don't know. Like
the palm of your hand, like tiny.
The palm of your hand, right? Yeah. And you get like 8 of them.
Yeah.
It's not like here, it's like, oh, this $17 taco boasts like 3 pieces of tortilla and like a mound of short rib, right? You're losing that the harmony.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the big problem here.
Yeah.
I think, and the other problem here too is, you know, you're buying these tortillas that were made earlier in the day. You go to the market in Mexico and they're literally just like slapping them together and throwing them on the pan right there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different combinations at play. Plus, you got all those good salsas.
Yeah.
Right here, it's like, I don't know where it's all gone so wrong.
Yeah.
But we get sort of I think it comes down to the money.
Yeah.
It's like, we have to make a lot of money off of this dish. So you got to charge a certain amount. Therefore, you got to have a lot of meat. Yeah. And all of a sudden, the second you put a lot of fancy meat, you've lost the authenticity of it.
That's what I love about, like, taco. Because I used to live on the border of Mexico, right by Matamoros. And we would go over and, like, stay with our friends' parents, like, all weekend long. And you would get these tacos, and they were in perfect proportion. Just a little bit of meat,
yep,
a little bit of onion, a little bit of cilantro, tortilla. That was it. Like,
that's
nothing
it.
More. Like, and a sprinkle of salt.
And
there's
guess
no
what?
Cheese. There's no salsa.
And you
salsa.
Can eat 20 of them if you want.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it doesn't matter if they're small. It's the proportion that is what's
it's light, and it just can't be that much meat, because then you get, like, everything starts, like, greasing everywhere and dripping. Yep.
You know what's so weird is that I was gonna interject earlier, but Lex was on a roll, so I didn't. But my favorite Mexican restaurant I've ever been to was Matamoros on Bedford. Do you remember that place?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
The Pozole.
In the back there, right?
In the back. It was these three little women from Puebla, and they worked 7 days a week, 15 hours a day, and there's these three little women, and they just fucking pounded it out. I don't even think I ever had a taco there because I accidentally got the pozole.
Yeah.
And if I was sick or if I was happy or if I was depressed, I would go. And it was in the back of a Mexican grocery store, and their pozole there was one of the finest things I've ever had in my life. That's how good it was. And they served it proper. It was like a lot of broth, a little hominy, and then the little oregano and the little peppers and the lime and the cilantro all on the side, and you just kind of season. Oh, it was so good.
Mexico is big. How many states are there? 12 in Mexico?
I think there's more. I think there's like 20 something, but I might be wrong.
Mexico City has like what, like 2 million people?
Yeah, when you talk about things like what's authentic.
I mean 40 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a million people on the subway at any given time.
We always want to like distill as Americans, you know, like, oh, this is Mexican.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, within our own country we have Southern, we have, you know, New England, we have all these different kind of cuisines and, you know, other countries.
Yeah, how far is obviously with like Italy, that, you know, you go to all the way to the south and it's all olive oil, but then if you go to the Swiss border you start seeing more butter and the cuisine is completely different in the south and north. But in Mexico, like is like if like the furthest north and the furthest south or east or west, is it completely too like,
well, I think
completely
you're
different?
Also
different.
You're coming off down the there. Sea
Remember
too.
After Sweet Ups, when our lease ended, when we were living together, I got that van off those two Mexicans over on Meeker.
Yeah.
And I was like, guys, you know, do you think this van would make it to Mexico City? They look at each other like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, right. It's like, but I'll take it anyways, you know, it feels right. But no, I drove all the way down from here down to Mexico City, and the change that you see driving down is unbelievable. Like in the north, the people are very tall.
Mm-hmm.
They're driving like Silverados, and there's like Pep Boys and AutoZones and McDonald's.
In Mexico. Yeah.
And as you start getting down, things start to change. And I mean, it's actually astonishing how far down you have to drive before you start feeling like, wow, this is like
Central
the Mexico
America.
I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. You start getting down towards like, you know, Guadalajara, Mexico City.
Yeah.
And then, of course, now, you know, you go down to like, you know, Chiapas. Oaxaca, places like that where it's real authentic down in the South. But
are there things like it does, like I'm not even saying this is a joke, but does everybody in Mexico eat tortilla, like in the North and the South? Yeah. So tortilla is like a common thread.
Oh yeah, corn is the food. And mm-hmm. actually I've heard some people say that actually the one thing that makes us not have the best tacos in this country, it comes down to the masa and the kind of corn that we're using.
Sure.
I don't know if that's true. Could very well be. I never thought of that.
Well, 100% of corn now is GMO, right? But that's what I've heard.
Yeah, well, Monsanto. I mean, the kind of corn that Mexico is using now, too, is
it's
American.
Probably, oh, really?
I did not know
with
that.
NAFTA. And, there's a lot of issues with the corn. I don't remember which way it goes.
But no, the corn, and it doesn't change at all. It's like a very, you know, we have this lady who has taught me a lot of cooking in Mexico. She was like the cuidador, like the lady that takes care of the house, and she's like a chef. I'm like, listen, show me how to do, you know, these tacos or these, you know, chiles rellenos. Mm-hmm. And it's funny the way that people cook in Mexico and what people expect on the street, where it's like, no, a taco is exactly like this. Mm-hmm. It's not like the sort of New York mentality of like, how can we like, you know, deconstruct this and make it. No, it's like there, it's completely, it's always this traditional approach. Mm-hmm. It has to be done like this. Mm-hmm. And and at the basis of it all is the tortilla. And
that's the same. That's the same mentality that like Italian. I work with Italians.
Yeah, exactly.
And where there's no variation, there's no options. It's like, no, that's not cappuccino.
I know it's mind blowing for a New Yorker. Yeah, I was in Mexico City. I'm down there all the time. And one thing is funny. You know, yeah, it's a city of like 40 million people. And you know, in New York,
exaggeration.
It's like, here we've got the pot stickers on this sidewalk, and then over here we've got the Patsy. We got like all these million, you know, little food trucks. Mexico City, with everybody bustling and walking around, I'm like, where's the pot stickers? Where's the halal? Where's this? And it's like, you ask a million people there, and they'll all answer the same thing. They're like, why would I want that when I eat tacos? Like, I eat tacos. This is what we eat.
Yeah.
I get the only food stands they have there are tortas and tacos.
Oh my God, I love tortas.
And like cubanos. Like, that is it. There's nothing else. And there would be no question or discussion about ever having anything else because that's what people eat.
You know what's so funny is Italy is exactly. I lived in Rome for like 8 months. And the funny thing is after about 4 or 5 months, I kind of like started like, not, I love it, but still, I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, yes, we, you know, a penne arrabbiata every night kind of gets, you know, tiring. Yeah. And so there's a street that's like 2 blocks from the Colosseum called Via Serpente, and it's literally like 6th Street in Manhattan. It's literally, but it's only 3 restaurants all in a row, and they're all Indian.
Yeah, like Brick Lane, London Brick Lane.
Yeah, exactly. So we'd go over there and have Indian food, and then it was a big deal because there was one Mexican restaurant that opened in Rome and it was packed and, you know, and like, but besides that, and then there's like some Irish bars and then everything else is just Italian.
Yeah. No, like, I've had this fantasy of moving to Mexico City and opening up like a traditional American barbecue spot.
Right? Awesome,
yeah. It could be crazy. Or it could just be the most empty restaurant in the world because people would be like, why would I eat that?
Yeah, exactly.
Why would I eat that?
Daniel Sharp just got back from London. He was there visiting his sister for a bit. And I guess the barbecue is huge over there, but they're advertising all their beef as USDA Prime or not even Prime, like they're just advertising like USDA beef at their barbecue was like what was the, you know, drawing people in. That was like the marketing. I'm like, what does that even mean, USDA beef, except that its origins are in America, so you're just paying for American beef.
Well, it started in Melbourne. And now it's like, but in Melbourne, like the Mexican food scene is the biggest thing, which the funny thing is about this, me and, do you remember Shane Yates?
Yates. I just saw him the other day. Yeah.
Oh, is he here?
He was in town. We had a drink here.
Really?
At Roberta's. Yeah.
And he didn't say hi to me? I'm going to kill him.
I think we stopped.
South African Shane.
South Africa.
South Africa.
Yeah.
Your accents are on point today. Yeah.
So, no, but we actually talked about it. Was for South Africa, but it would also work in Australia. We actually talked about doing a business of like doing a taco truck. And what you do, you call a surf report. You call the surf report in the morning. Now somebody's going to steal this and Shane's going to fucking be pissed at me, but I don't care because he didn't do it. But you call the surf report in the morning, and wherever the surfers are going, you take the taco truck there.
Yep.
And so all the surfers that go will know your taco truck because you're there on that day at the right spot.
We could still do this. Brilliant. If we like made some moves like next week.
Yeah.
I would be down. Let's just do that.
Can we please edit that part out, Liz?
All right. All right, I think we should go go meet a little bit more about this brilliant idea.
Yes, we are taking investments. Yes. I'll give you my PayPal account right now.
Call them into the studio. I forget the number.
Phil Surfo Taco Chucker.
Yep. Yeah. We'll come up with something a little. Yeah, we'll come up with something.
Lex, thank you so much for sitting in studio with us,
hanging out. Alexis.
Thank you for creating the best burger in America.
I would do it.
The shrimp burger.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah. Well, anytime.
I just want to say thank you to our engineer today, Liz Smith. Today's break music was provided by the Gingerlees. Our theme song, of course, is I Never Had by Bree Love and Chufu.
The best two guys in the world.
The best people ever. Thank you so much to our sponsor, S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Best ham ever. Go to Virginia. Try it out. And I just want to say thank you guys so much for tuning in. If you've liked what you heard, please consider telling a friend. And also subscribe to the show on iTunes. And feel free to get in touch with us at heritageradionetwork.org. We always love to hear what you think, so leave a review, leave a comment. And next up, we're going to have a short clip of Roberta's Radio, which airs live on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Thanks, guys. Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
Thank you.
Cool. This is a question, which is, would you go out with this person again? You're on a date. They pick the place.
Listen to a dating horror story on episode 25 of Roberta's Radio.
You go. You're having drinks. You have a couple rounds of drinks. They're like, do you want to order food? You say yes. You order food. You get a bunch of stuff, right? A bunch of small plates.
It's going well.
The other person says, hey, we should get this, and we should get this, and do you like this? And let's get one of these, because that's what I like.
Yeah, and you're like, I'm agreeable. Sure, yeah, let's do this, right?
You're trying to be a nice person.
It's a first date. You want to be charming.
Indeed.
Just like
charming.
That.
Charming.
That's like charming in a Cruella de Vil kind of way.
Yeah, it's like a Disney, like, evil character.
I think this is foreshadowing. Yes. Carry
so this
on.
This is going
Harry.
Well, I
so
think.
So it's going well, and it's going well. And then we get the bill, and he's like, do you mind if we split this? So I was like, okay, yeah, sure. I'm happy to split the bill.
I think that's fair, right?
Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's $120. So
okay,
it's.
That's a little.
Well, hey, you can't put a dollar amount on
was
a first
date. Was he like being like, oh, let's get this?
Yes, he was. So I'm
that's kind of bull fucking shit
Johnny, you lost the game again. Someone you should not know, Johnny Culotti.
If he's like saying, let's order the menu, that's, I don't know.
Yeah, if it's all his idea.
So I go, okay, great. Well, I split the bill, fine. Whatever.
It's
it's whatever.
You're
it's 20, it's 2015. Who cares, right? Yeah. Fine. Would I have ordered all that food if I was going to split the bill? Maybe not.
I would order more drinks.
Yeah.
Whenever you're drunk and you're on a date.
Yeah.
So it's time to celebrate.
So, then I look over, we're leaving, and I look and I see that he didn't tip on his half of the bill.
Oh.
That's rough.
I hope he's listening to that.
I hope he's listening.
He knows who he is.
I mean, are you in the service industry, right? Like, you can't do that. No go. No.
That's a deal breaker.
Wait, so then did you feel bad and take, like, do the whole tip on your side there?
I didn't see this until I had already tipped. So I had tipped and signed, and they took mine, and then he was signing his, and he left his face up, and we were, like, putting our coats on.
He paid on cards.
He left his face up. Clear that he did not tip.
That is egregious. There is a special place just like 40 miles down the road from Chef's Valhalla reserved for people like that.
You never know what you might hear on Roberta's Radio. Listen to all episodes on heritageradionetwork.org and on iTunes.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.